You handle it very carefully from a number of perspectives. You have to decide what should come home, what should be simply eliminated, sold, destroyed in the case of ammunition and some other supplies that are of uncertain quality, what to turn over to the Iraqis and how to do that. And then you have the how. How to bring the stuff back once you've decided even what should come back. And that's a huge process. You're absolutely right. We've got everything from tens of thousands of shipping containers that we're still paying on to armored vehicles, to ammunition, to white goods, probably $1 billion worth of white goods, refrigerators and air conditioners. And then there's a number of, you know, classified military systems and communications gear, all of which you've got to figure out how to repackage, get on ships, and bring it back, essentially reversing the entire flow while still sending stuff forward for those troops that are still remaining in country.
And Mr. Gore, how does when the army or the military does turn over material to the Iraqi government, is it something that we give to them? Is it something that they pay for? Or how are those arrangements handled generally?
It depends. There's a number of different ways of doing that. Some of that they may pay for. Then the question, of course, is do they pay the full market price that we pay? Do they pay a depreciated price? How does one arrive at that? Some of it is given to them, particularly if it's material that we don't see another use for, or it may simply be used and we decide that it's better off staying in country rather than us having to bring it back, refurbish, and the like. Some of it can come through military sales. Some of it comes through special, if you will, gifting of material to the Iraqis. There's a number of different programs, not necessarily always coordinated.
And there are risks also for military personnel. They don't want to leave themselves unprotected. And clearly there's a lot of violence in the area. There's constant risk. So as you draw down to smaller numbers, does the risk become much higher?
It potentially can. I mean, this is going to be very carefully managed. How do you withdraw? You withdraw, for example, from north to south, which is one way of doing it, kind of shrinking down towards, say, the Kuwaiti border. That's not the best way to do it because then, you know, you sort of are predictable and you leave certain areas unaccessible or without any kind of security force, while others may have too much. So we are going to likely be in pockets in various places around Iraq, probably meaning that if we're still in the far north or in the middle of the country as we're withdrawing, we have to rely more on air power for our resupply and for withdrawal rather than just bringing it all by land. This becomes a really very carefully, if it's going to be successful, very carefully orchestrated process in order to ensure the forces in place are protected, the forces in transition are protected, and the people doing supply back and forth are protected.
We're talking this morning to Dan Gouret, military analyst with the Lexington Institute, about how the government goes about drawing down troops and materiel from Iraq. All right, so they're probably already initiating some of this. Have we seen any evidence that this is going well, badly, at all?
We haven't really seen a lot of evidence. We know the plans are in place, or at least are being developed, but the first part of the plan is to do kind of the assessment, know what do you really have and where is it, and then to make the assessment of what do you start thinking about bringing back. So that started. We haven't seen a lot of movement. The reason is, of course, that while we're out of the cities, which was a minor withdrawal in some sense, we still have, you know, 130-something thousand troops in country, most of whom are not even going to start coming back for some months at least. That gives us, of course, time to do this kind of planning and time to have discussions with the Iraqis about how they help us withdraw, how they provide security, and, of course, what we turn over to them.
And, Mr. Gouret, who makes the final decision? I mean, who's the arbiter about what goes, what stays, what it will cost if the Iraqis buy it? Is it the defense secretary? Is it, you know, someone above his grade? How does that get done?
Well, hopefully, you know, the issue of who gets the air conditioning from a particular base or whatever isn't going to be raised to the level of President Obama,
right,
or even the secretary on some things. For example, we have tens of thousands of these mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, these heavily armored trucks and such that we've brought into country to save lives. Some of those would clearly be of value if we turn them over to the Iraqis. They're very new, relatively new, of course. We only bought them at the most a couple of years ago. Do we turn some of those over to the Iraqis, and how many? We want to use a lot of them or have them available in case we have another problem or, in fact, in case Iraq flares up. So that may be a case where that discussion gets raised to fairly high level, certainly in the Army and possibly even to the Secretary, as we begin to trace through what stays, what goes.
And, all right, so could they be moved, in theory, to Afghanistan? I know that there are operations being set up there. So, I mean, it would be an airlift, right? I don't think you could drive through the terrain to get to Afghanistan.
When it comes to those kind of vehicles, for example, we are refurbishing and changing out, providing new suspensions for some of those vehicles to get them, the smaller ones, the MRAP vehicles, to get up. But we actually have a new contract to produce a new generation of these so-called MRAPs, MRAP Light, or the MRAP all-terrain vehicle. Oshkosh just won that contract to provide perhaps as many as 10,000 of those, primarily for the Afghanistan campaign. So, again, you're now going to produce new vehicles for Afghanistan. What do you do with the nearly 15,000 that you've deployed to Iraq? Just moving them, by the way, because they're all a huge amount of
tons.
Like, getting them back is going to be just a large logistical problem.
So they may, in fact, stay.
Some of them may stay in Kuwait at the very least. We're not going to move them all immediately. So they're going to be there, you know, perhaps as long as through 2011 when our agreement with the Iraqis runs out. A number of them may stay in Kuwait, both to protect Kuwait and our interests in the region, and also just in case we need them to go back into Iraq. And then a bunch of them have to, in the end, come home to be deployable with our forces elsewhere in the world.